This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is the Tuesday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. We got a lot to get to here, talking a lot of Major League Baseball. Certainly the World Cup taking center stage. We continue our countdown to Canton with another breakdown of one NFL team every single day. Jensen, good to be back in the studio as we got everything back up and running here in the great state of Kentucky.
It's absolutely wonderful seeing you there. It's a fancy, a great opportunity to be alive and well inside the studio. Sorry, it's the World Cup coming out of me. What I can't even quantify what we saw yesterday. We'll get into it, obviously. Big day in the NBA, too, with free agency getting underway. You're right. Some stuff on the diamond last night, pretty crazy as well.
Yeah, and we're not going to talk about the Mets and all their the calamities continue for the Metropolitans and another loss yesterday. Matt Youmans is going to join the program as he does each and every Tuesday right there from Las Vegas as well in Sin City. Greg Hoops Peterson talking some baseball on the day. Alex Crook is going to rejoin the program again as we continue this thrilling and very enthralling World Cup. And Jensen, that's where we begin today's edition of our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
For everybody that advanced yesterday, to say it was dicey would be an understatement, but it is Brazil, Morocco, and Paraguay that do punch their tickets to the round of 16. I think in each match you can go back at a couple of pivotal spots and say, how in the world did they get this done? It looked like Japan might be able to knock out Brazil early in that one. I know Germany has got a lot of issues today to talk about in their match, and certainly last night the Netherlands thought maybe they've got this thing until they don't. Morocco getting it through on kicks. Jensen, what a wild day in the World Cup yesterday.
It really was. What you find in the knockout round now is ridiculousness all the way to the end. When they tell you don't leave your seat, and don't turn it off until it is over. Boy, did yesterday personify that, and then some. All kinds of things that we'll break down here. But Brazil, by the hair of their chinny chin chin, they find a way to get it done at the death, as they call it in World Cup vernacular, Dave. They get it across 2-1, so they advance. Germany, with all kinds of chances, could not get it done.
Man.
They go to extra time. It looked as though they were going to have the winner, Dave, and then VAR ends up calling it back. They get to penalties. If you haven't watched the drama of those penalty kicks, you should go back and do it, because at one point Paraguay thought they were through, and then Germany makes a couple of incredible saves. Then we have an airmail of a PK and sudden death. Paraguay gets it across the line. And then what can you say about Morocco, man? 60-1 shot I've got in pocket. Remember, we knew we were going to lose either Netherlands 14-1 or Morocco 60-1. I did not have on my bingo card that we get that kind of header in the 90th minute to get it to extra time. And then another set of penalties that will live long in African lore, man. Incredible, incredible night of soccer. And we got a dandy of a lineup here again today.
If you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, you've been seeing Alex Blowers and his write-ups here for the World Cup. And Alex is here on site today getting us back up and running. And as I said, I'm no expert on this, but I'm watching that in real time. And I'm thinking, that looks like a good goal to me with Germany taking that lead. I said, Alex, what'd you think? He said, kind of soft, Dave, kind of soft. So it seemed like there are certainly some differing of opinions out there as to whether or not that goal from Germany should have stood. Even on the broadcast, you noticed there was a split in that booth, 1-1, saying it was a good call, others saying not so good. But Germany is out, and we march on now if you're Paraguay. Let's talk about what we're seeing in free agency here. How about John Morant, as the Trailblazers acquire John Morant? Free agency has officially begun, and this is, you know, when I saw the headline that the Memphis Grizzlies have traded superstar John Morant, I went, superstar. Yeah, that might have been 5 years ago, 4 years ago, Jensen, but it's been a tumultuous time to end his time in Memphis. Maybe it's one of those deals you can get out there to Portland and start over, but I don't know where we are in John Morant at this stage of his career.
It looks like a high upside swing if you're the Blazers, right? And looking at a young core with Scoot Henderson and Ja Morant, we've talked all the time you and I have been together about change of scenery and what that mm-hmm. dueling star power might look like in the backcourt. So I'm assuming that's where Portland was on that side. And I think Memphis is kind of like, all right, we're done. Thanks a lot. Can we move on and get some adults in the locker room here? Some other ones that were key, Dave, in my eyes yesterday. Kristaps Porzingis, of course, a 2-year, $40 million signing back with Golden State. Draymond Green, as expected, declining his player option. And then Julian Champagne with a nice 3-year, $45 million deal to go back with the San Antonio Spurs. A lot more to jump into on the NBA free agency front today as well.
Yeah, there's a lot to get to, and this will be changing a lot of these players, changing teams here. We'll try to keep abreast of it because, again, you're wondering, is there going to be a super team reforming in Golden State? Will LeBron James end up there? Is it good enough? I saw pictures of a lot of those guys. What's stopping this team? And some people said AARP and or their knees. If they're really going to go for one last shot and get the boys back together, maybe an Anthony Davis trade out there in the works as well. That's the good side of the NBA talk this time. Here's the downside. And we've got Malik Beasley and Ed Davis both indicted on federal gambling charges. These are in-game. These are Malik Beasley being accused by the feds of prop plays and maybe skewing them one way or the other, to the under, to the over, depending on what he might have in that day. And Ed Davis betting on Malik Beasley props. Jensen, we've talked about it before. We're not lawyers. But when you see the federal government involved, that's normally not a good sign if you're Malik Beasley or Ed Davis.
Yeah, let's underline it to innocent until proven guilty here in these great United States. But Dave, it sounds like that this investigation spanned about a year and a half. And that is a long time to be able to gather what looks like incredibly damning evidence. So a very big uphill battle from at least the evidence that's been put out there thus far. Dave, for people that don't know, this is an alleged sports gambling scheme that targeted at least four games during the 2023-2024 mm-hmm. season. That according to the federal indictment there on Monday. I don't know about you, pal, but I know we've had this conversation with Thomas Gable. We've had it with Mike Palm. The reason why the legalization of gambling throughout the states was so critical is to catch these kinds of things that are happening. And it's not just, you know, the small peanuts, it's the big fish. And again, another way that you're trying to keep competitive integrity, especially at the highest level professional sports. Very interested to see how this plays out and what the domino effects will be. Another black eye here for Adam Silver in the NBA.
Yeah, we'll talk to our guys, certainly Mike Palm on Palm's Pressing 3 and on Thursday with Mike, and certainly with TG Thomas Gable on Fridays. But I will say this, there's been a change already in the prop structure here at Circa in Kentucky. So there are changes, tangible changes coming in the prop market. And I know in some areas they're saying maybe we should just get rid of the prop market. I don't know that that's the right thing to do, if that's going to solve what is ailing certainly the NBA right now. But there are changes that you're seeing, and because of it, I think you're seeing it because of what's happening right now in the NBA and beyond. How about this in the NFL? Tarion Arnold, this story is just wild. It is bizarre for all the wrong reasons. So a judge in Florida yesterday said, all right, we're going to give you bond. It's going to be $1 million bond. And when you go to training camp with the Lions, you'll be able to do that for work-related things. Well, he no longer has work because the Lions have released the former first-round pick after his arrest. So Jensen, even though the courts, he got a favorable ruling, if you get down into the brass tacks of it, he doesn't have a team right now to go to work for.
Again, bringing people up to speed who are not aware of the particulars here. Arrested last week on felony charges of armed robbery and kidnapping. You mentioned the $1 million bond as part of that conditionary set. Not allowed contact with the six co-defendants or the witnesses in the case. He must surrender his passport within 48 hours, and he is now confined to his residence in Tallahassee, except, as you mentioned, too, when he'd be playing, training, and traveling with the Lions or making court-related appearances or legal appointments. Well, you can go ahead and cross off any of the playing, training, and traveling with the Lions. He will be playing, training, and traveling on his own. So a pretty big loss, at least in football terms, as far as what he meant to the secondary for the Lions. So next man up. for Dan Campbell and company and how they will replace a guy that was pretty critical to their success. No question about it.
And it was wild, too. Nick Saban, of course, he played at Alabama for Nick Saban. He did write a character letter and did submit that to the court of law on behalf of Terrion Arnold from Nick Saban. I don't know if that's going to have any weight down there, but it's still Nick Saban that is vouching, at least for the character of what he saw when he was at Alabama. But what he is being alleged to have done does not sound like anything that what Nick Saban saw in Alabama. Big day today in the world of tennis. Serena Williams is going to make her return. Again, it's just wild to think that Serena Williams will be playing in a first-round match today. You saw Novak Djokovic, speaking of the old and some of the great champions that we've ever seen here at Wimbledon and beyond. He survived a four-set scare yesterday, as did Jannik Sinner survived a first-round scare as well. So Jensen, so far, we'll find out what it is for Serena today. All eyes will be on her and her comeback. But for the men's side, for the favorite and the second betting choice, it wasn't easy, but to both get through to the second round.
Oh, God. Of course, after we debut one of the most life-changing cross-sport parlays in the history of cross-sport parlays yesterday, it would have been one and done had Jannik Sinner not survived. I was texting Joe Frieza, like, I did not need this kind of sweat already in match number one. But if that is his scare and the eyes are open now, Dave, we're in great shape. Serena Williams, a short dog today, plus $1.10 against Maya Joint, minus $1.39. Let me know how that goes. 11:20 a.m. Eastern time is when that match gets underway. I will not be watching other things and other priorities, especially on the pitch, to be concerned with.
I'll check it out for you. I'm intrigued by Serena's comeback. Let's see what she's got in store. When we come back, let's going to hear from Eric Rinaldi. He was on Money Moves yesterday. What does he say about Team USA? We'll discuss next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
The 4th of July, we're going to bring back something we rarely do, a multi-year VSiN Pro subscription. How about that to celebrate 250? For 1 week only, you're going to get 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. That's right. Access through July 2028 at nearly 70% off the regular monthly price. You're going to get our NFL betting guide, our daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and every single betting guide, season preview, and VSiN Pro feature we release over the next 2 years. Don't wait, though. This is a special 4th of July offer. It will disappear after July 7th, so head over to VSiN.com/subscribe now. Lock in 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. I mean, Jensen, $299, we're celebrating 250 years of our independence. That is as good an offer over the next 2 years as you can possibly boot. I mean, VSiN, hats off, happy 4th of July. If you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber, I don't know that you're going to get a better deal.
No notes. Well said.
That's it. I mean, come on. Let's go, America. Get on board. We are going to hear from Eric Winalda a little bit later on. He's got some very interesting takes here on Team USA and beyond. We're going to have Matt Eumanns join the program in the very next segment. He's got some interesting things he wants to talk about with Scottie Scheffler finishing second again yesterday, and we'll get to that in a moment as well. But big NBA news here on the docket today. We'd mentioned Ja Morant has been traded to the Trailblazers. Jeremy Grant's coming back, Chris Murray as well. Kristaps Porzingis, Draymond Green opting out to free agents, clear up some space there for Golden State. We wonder if that means to pursue LeBron James and possibly a trade for Anthony Davis But again, when you bring in the zinger back, what about that money? How is that all going to work out? Jensen, I think today most people are discussing Golden State and exactly what they're trying to do. Does it feel like for Steph, and Father Time is undefeated, although he's still great, that they're trying to get old veterans around Steph to make one more run out there in the Bay?
As long as LeBron doesn't come to Cleveland, that'd be great. And so go right ahead, Golden State, give him the money, old, decrepit, and he could kind of should be a rotation player at this point. Warriors also add Al Horford, 2 years, $14 million. The Draymond Green era, is it finally over? Now also with the opportunities to bring in better players, more effective ones. He actually was decently good on the desk there. Charles Barkley and Kenny the Jet and Shaquille O'Neal, really one of the better dressed guys. And maybe that's where Draymond needs to be with that in his podcast. But as it stands here, you look at where they needed some front court scoring. Golden State did. And they would satisfy that with Anthony Davis when healthy. I don't know, Dave, the all AARP team in the West going up against the Thunder and the Spurs, not an investment I would want to make. I don't know about you. What do you think?
Probably not. I mean, I'm not looking to get invested at 45-1 in this team until I know exactly what it's going to look like. I mean, you mentioned Al Horford. You mentioned Kristaps Porzingis, Draymond Green. I mean, what year is this? So I'm looking at these guys and I'm going, these are all great names. These are all at one time great players. But, you know, is that going to excite you in the betting market to get invested in Golden State? Probably not. Now, I will say this. Steph Curry, to me, there hasn't been a whole lot of slowdown. It's going to happen eventually. I don't know when that's going to be, if it's going to be this year, next year, or we start to see that you're playing on the back nine of your NBA career. Clearly, we think he's on the back nine. I don't know which hole he'd be on at this juncture. So is he great enough still at this point, if you put this roster together, to bet it? I'm not, certainly not. With the young killers they have out there in the West, in San Antonio, most notably in OKC, I don't know that they're remotely close to being on that level, if that's what you're going to get, and you're going to try to get this older group together. Now, like in context of Major League Baseball, they are doing it in Philadelphia and it's working out. And they were talking about, well, they got to break up that group eventually with Schwarber and Harper and Trey Turner, guys like that. No, it's working out now. I wonder if Golden State in the basketball context can do that for this year. But man, I feel like that is the smallest potential window if that's the route that they're going to go this year with those older guys to make a run, because it really would be a 1 year window to see if he can capture it again. That's not where I'd be putting my money. I mentioned the Lakers without LeBron James and turning over the keys there. I'll be more curious out West in California for what the Lakers look like. And it's shorter number on the board today at 30-1 building around Luka. I think there might be more value there than what we might see in Golden State. We mentioned the World Cup off the top. It's been scintillating so far. Brazil, Paraguay, and Morocco getting through. You do have some tickets. A long shot one here with Morocco that lives to see another day. Jensen, you mentioned monetization here. Have you thought it through with Morocco if they can get through one more round?
Well, let's start there, right? And they needed an equalizer in the 90th minute just to even get to extra time, let alone into penalty kicks, where they end up advancing 3-2 on penalties there. So now they are set up for a round of 16 match against Canada. Was just checking the early line here. They are a minus $1.35 favorite within regulation to defeat the Canadians. And again, it was a spot that I knew we were losing either Netherlands at 14-1 or Morocco at 60-1, but felt that either of those squads would be in really good contention to be able to defeat either South Africa or Canada. So I really like our spot there. I think the biggest story is Germany. And boy, one of the favorites or one of the dark horses outside of the big four that looks anything but a world-class group. And credit where it's due. I mean, Paraguay, they had to weather a few of some big chances, both in the first half and the second half. And then a VAR call that ends up going in favor of Paraguay. Otherwise, Germany would have survived and won 2-1 there in extra time. But some penalties that don't go their way, they end up falling out. I think that's the biggest surprise. And Brazil would have been right there. Another team where you have to start asking some questions about. However, they survive, they advance, and now you kind of look at where the bracket sets up. for a couple of these teams. I think Brazil now still alive and kicking. They will take on the winner of the first match today between Ivory Coast and Norway. Fully expect Norway to be able to get this done. This could be more of a high event game, Dave. We saw unders hitting yesterday in two of the three games. The draw, here we go. The draw ends up happening again. And reminder, the draw is just for that 90-minute regulation. It does not include extra time. So if you're looking to underdogs here, it's a great way to kind of monetize that regulation side. And then if you're looking at a team to advance, make sure you play that market, not the money line market. That is an important caveat that we mentioned yesterday. So Brazil set up to have a chance to move forward. Dave, I did see some video down in Mexico of fans that have been up all night in front of the Ecuadorian team hotel. They have been creating havoc, being loud, trying to make sure that Ecuador can't sleep. Get ready for a scintillating atmosphere between the Mexicans and the Ecuadorians later on at 9 o'clock Eastern tonight.
Didn't we smoke Paraguay the first time out there? Now Paraguay beats Germany. I don't know if we can do that like we do MMA math a lot of times. I wonder if that works in soccer here. But all of a sudden, maybe, you know, that 35-1 ticket for the United States doesn't look too shabby after what we saw yesterday with Paraguay and Germany, certainly on the pitch. When we came on the air yesterday, we knew that we were going to get the resumption of play in the last ever elevated event here on the PGA Tour. And that did happen, and we gave it to you in real time yesterday. And that's Scottie Scheffler sticking his approach on the first playoff hole to about 4 feet. And Victor Hovland got it to about 10 feet. So he had a little slider. Well, he makes his putt. Scottie misses his little four-footer. And all of a sudden, Victor Hovland wins the last ever elevated event at the Travelers Championship. Now, while that is significant, he won, Victor Hovland, $3.6 million by beating Scottie Scheffler in that one-hole playoff. Jensen, a bettor made more than Victor Hovland made for winning the tournament. How about this from DK Insights on X? One bettor at DK Sports placed $77,000 on an outright ticket on Victor Hovland to win the Travelers at 52-1. They made over $4 million on that putt. Now, I don't know if this is an individual. I don't know if this is a group, but I ask you, sir, if you're putting $77,000 on a 52-1 outright ticket on a 4-day tournament, well, this one turned out to be a 5-day tournament, I don't know how much sweat is involved, and I don't know how much hedging might have been involved when you had the whole night to kind of rethink your position a little bit before you played that one-hole playoff yesterday.
Yeah, that would have been my question. What is the net worth of the individual who decided to do that? And congratulations, you're a winner, whoever you are. But what a sweat. Did they sleep? I'm sure they did Sunday night, because as we said, you're putting 77K on a 52-1 long shot.
Wow.
I mean,
well then if Victor, once you see Scottie Scheffler stick the approach, you're going, oh my, I should have hedged.
Right.
I should have hedged. And then of course, Scottie misses the putt. We're going to talk more about Scottie and beyond, because we have Matt Youmans coming up next, the host of VSiN Primetime. He's straight ahead right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
VSiN by the Books on this Tuesday morning. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here with you. Always look forward to our conversations with Matt Youmans. He is the host of VSiN Primetime right here in the network, 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Give him a follow on X at MattYoumans247. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. And Matt, I was just saying that there was a bettor out there on DK that apparently had a little 52-1 on Victor Hovland to win the Travelers, and has $77,000 bet. So the bettor made more for the earnings than Victor Hovland did, taking over $4 million in the wager. Victor 3.6. When Scottie Scheffler somehow missed, what, about a 4 or 5 footer that he stuffed on some of the easiest greens in the PGA Tour? Matt, what is your take on what you're seeing from Scottie Scheffler?
You know, we talked about this bet last night. It was tweeted out on DK Insights.
I think that might be the best golf bet I've ever seen. $77,000? Wow. Are you kidding me? So who's got 77K to bet on a 52-1 shot and pays off $4 million? That's incredible. First of all, I'm surprised DraftKings took the bet. And then I thought, first thought was I had to be Dave Ross, 77,000. Right? No, you know what? You guys
just laying around, Matt.
I know. you guys were on the air yesterday during the playoff at the Travelers, and it was fun while it lasted. And it lasted about 15 minutes. I was up watching it, and both guys hit the fairway. Great approach shot. Scotty's actually, I think he said, 3 feet away. And Hovland knocks down that putt. I was watching. I've been watching Scotty miss short putts all summer, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 feet. And I thought he was going to miss it. I really did. I thought he was going to miss it low, left edge, and that's exactly where he missed it. And, you know, he hit so many great shots and so many clutch putts. And then he blew that one. It seems like a mental problem with him right now with putting. Do you trust him in the British Open? I feel like you can bet Scotty top five, top ten. Is he going to make enough putts in the British to win it? I don't know. It's interesting right now. I look at DraftKings. He's plus 350. At the Westgate Superbook, he's plus 550. That's a big difference. Dave, if you're going to drop about 80,000 on a golfer to win the British Open, you should make sure you get the better number. I don't know. I don't think I really trust Scotty. One of these days, he's going to break through. He's got four runner-up finishes this season. How about that? Reminds me of that old golf fact about Jack Nicklaus. I'm sure you guys know this. He won 17 majors. He finished second 19 times, right? Yeah, it is. It is amazing. And Scotty right now just can't get over the hump. Eventually, he's going to knock the door down again. But he just can't make enough putts. You guys were watching this yesterday. I felt like he choked. I felt like he choked on that last putt. But, you know, he'll be in contention at the British, which he won last year. And I think you can bet him top five. You can bet him top ten. But I've got to get at least 550 or 6-1 to even consider betting him to win that tournament.
It smells like a little cross-sport parlay, a little J-Lew special here, Matty Humans. We did that with Rory McIlroy and Yannick Sinner and the Dodgers to win the World Series. Let me start there. I know it was a game that you had your eye on last night. Dodgers Athletics there in Sacramento. Dodgers just putting it on. Gage Jump, the youngster, getting a full baptism into what a vaunted lineup in Major League Baseball looks like. Feels like you can go right back to the well tonight, can't you? The way the Dodgers are going. And I think that over 10.5 also looks pretty advantageous tonight.
Yeah, Jensen, you know, I did take a shot with Gage Jump last night because I watched him, I think, probably in four of his first six starts. And I thought the kid was really impressive. And, you know, a lefty matching up against Max Muncy and Ohtani. And I thought maybe he could give the Dodgers some trouble. Muncy took him deep. He had faced 150 batters in the majors, and that was the first time he had allowed a homer against Muncy last night. Well, this Dodgers lineup, Mookie Betts is getting hot. Everybody's hitting right now. They're starting to get healthy. Dodgers look really impressive, and they face Jeffrey Springs tonight in 17 starts. He's got only four quality starts. 88 innings, 88 hits, 29 walks. He's allowed 22 homers with a whip of 133 and an ERA over 5.5. I think the Dodgers are probably going to tee off again tonight. And Justin Robleski, I didn't like him at first this season, but he started to grow on me. Jensen, he's not a strikeout guy, right? He's 9-2, 86 innings, 53 Ks. He's allowed only seven homers, a whip of about one flat and 271 ERA. Dodgers won three in a row. They've scored 28 runs in those games. I actually laid the $150 with the Dodgers tonight, and I see what you're talking about with the over. I think the Dodgers should have another big night offensively.
You know, Matt, we get a rundown here every day, and our esteemed producer, Joe Friso, fills it up with good nuggets. It says in the rundown that you want to discuss the Mets. Do we have to discuss the Mets, Matt?
I loved it last night. I thought it was a great way to start the game. Juan Soto misplaying a ball in left field. And the center fielder runs over, and he muffs it. It's a little league home run for George Springer. how fitting was that? The Mets have 56 errors. That's the third most in the MLB, and they're 35-50. I thought, guys, Dave, I hate to make fun of your team, but I thought they missed a golden opportunity. Instead of promoting Andy Green to manager, how about hiring Grimace, who really turned that team around a couple of years ago? And I thought, make Grimace the manager and Mr. Met the pitching coach, and you would have something there. That would be a monster team, right?
Boys, as awful as it, that would be an improvement from what we've seen so far this year, Matt, out of this team. And remember, they made all those changes, boys, so they would get better defensively. And then you watch that; it is it's Kelly Leak could do a better job in the Bad News Bears fielding balls in left or center field than what they're doing.
No, it's tough to watch for sure. Maddie, hey, let me throw something at you here, because it's not often that we have a fade New York parlay opportunity, but maybe just maybe tonight the Mets get the equalizer. Since we're talking World Cup here for the next several weeks, we'll use some of the English terminology, and you get Nolan McLain, who's been, you know, the best pitcher there for the Mets. And we get Tarek Skubal at a plus money price against your 100-1 AL Cy Young favorite in Cam Schlittler. Are we interested in that dynamic matchup there and maybe a little fun fade New York parlay tonight?
I'll tell you how I bet this. And I'm not going to say no to that, because the Yankees right now are anemic offensively. Man, they got on the board late last night with a homer. But again, late in the game, they had one hit. And this seems like a replay night after night. How about this stat from Katie Sharp at Sharp Stats? The Yankees, who were 12-13 in the month of June, the last four games, their offense, 38 strikeouts, 12 hits, 8 walks. That is absolutely pathetic. And the Yankees defensively have allowed 14 unearned runs in the last five games. And they're playing some really bad baseball right now. Cam Schlittler, my guy goes tonight, past four starts, 23 2/3 innings, 2 earned runs, 34-7 strikeout walk ratio. And I did play this under 7.5 at -123. I'm looking at the screen, guys, as we're talking. And as we started this segment, it was lighting up. Actually, DraftKings and Circuit just dropped a total to 7. There's still plenty of books out there where you can play under 7.5 at you got to lay 120 under 7.5, but a couple of books there did drop to 7. Jensen, I'm going to ask you what you've seen in Skubal, because how about this? Skubal, the last 16 innings, he's allowed 9 earned runs, 6 homers, and he allowed 3 homers in a 4-2 loss to the Yankees last Wednesday.
Always for me, Matt, and you look at where we have a stat called batting average of balls in play. And when you look at how unlucky maybe he had been or not, of the three starts in June thus far, a batting average on balls in play of 308, 357, and 100. So you look at then the final scores of those games. Loses 3-1 to the Guardians, beats the White Sox 4-3, loses to the Yankees 4-2. So could be a little unlucky in some respects. Ironically, the game that he just had against the Yankees, where he gives up 4 runs, a 100 average of balls in play. So that just kind of tells you how weird some of these things can be. 17 strikeouts, though, in his last 11 2/3. I actually kind of like the value, Matt, here tonight on Skubal, but I'm with you seeing where this total. I was just checking some of the numbers here. It's looking like a 7 now at DraftKings. A lot of other places still at 7.5 if people want to jump in on the under. But, man, I think we're in for some free air conditioning with the heat and humidity, Dave, down there at the stadium. Fade New York parlay potential payout tonight, Dave Ross. Just for a night only? No, sir. Maybe we take the Mets and we fade the Yankees, the crosstown rivals.
Well, to quote Austin Myers, Mike Myers, I too like to live dangerously, Austin Powers. That's for sure if you're betting the Mets these days. Hey, very quickly, Matt, are you thinking about hedging on that 300-1 at Cam Schlittler, or is it like we're still too early, we got to wait?
Still too early. We got 3 months to go. I haven't thought about that yet, really.
All right, because I see the second betting choice is Dylan Cease. We'll keep an eye on that situation. Also, he's going to have the most wins in the month of July. Yeah, we'll monitor that one, Matt, because you have a nice ticket sitting there. We'll talk about who's going to have the most wins in the month of July. That's next right here on VSiN by the Books.
by the books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the books on this Tuesday morning. Don't look now. Take a look. June is just about to expire. Getting ready to turn the page, Bob Seger style, into July. It is a very fun market. It's a very difficult market to bet the most wins in a singular month in Major League Baseball. For instance, the team that I had back in May was the Miami Marlins. Look what they did in June. So sometimes, Jensen, you might be a month early, you might be a month late on some of these teams out there. And again, you can look at some of the shorter shots, and they're the short shots for a reason, whether it's the Brewers at 5-1, the Dodgers at 650, Braves back in the marketplace up there towards the top at 650, the Yankees at 7-1 with their injuries, not so sure. But Jensen, that's just kind of a purview of some of the shorter shots on the board. I know you like some of these teams this month in July to get on the good foot. Are there any short shots that you like, mid shots, or dare I say a long shot or two?
Yeah, Gil Alexander did a great job yesterday. I was running around town before the heat index told me to go back inside. And I really appreciated him illuminating how July is different than any other month in the regular season. Obviously, Dave, because we have the All-Star break. But that also means that each team has a different amount of games. And so that's part of the handicap is let's start with a team that has the most games that they're going to play, at least now. Before we get into tomorrow, that's the Milwaukee Brewers. And the way they're playing right now, Dave, I think they're absolutely worth a play. They are a lean for me at 5-1. They are the shortest shot on the board. They had another comeback against the Cincinnati Reds to win last night. They're going to get them again for a couple of games tomorrow and also on Thursday to finish out their homestand. Then they head out on the road against an Arizona Diamondback team who's been struggling. They will go to St. Louis, but they will play five games in 4 days because they have a doubleheader to make up on July 7th. Then they'll head to Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates to finish the first half. They start the second half with, and they will have 14 games, at least on paper, entering the second half. They host the Marlins. They host the Mets. They host the Rockies. Now, that is a very winnable homestand for Milwaukee right now. Then they go out west to take on the Giants and the Angels, who are two teams that absolutely stink right now. So you can understand why they're the shortest shot on the board. They are definitely a lean for me, probably a half unit play there on them at 5-1. Then I took a look at some teams that are really trending well. And I went to the American League and I looked at the Tampa Bay Rays. At 12-1, they are really trending in the right direction. And you look at their July schedule on the road against Kansas City for a couple of games to start the month, then down to Houston before they come back home and take on the Yankees and the Mariners. Now, Dave, they have yet to lose, if memory serves, they have yet to lose a home game against an AL East opponent so far this year. So they have really handled their business within the division. After the break, they go to Boston. And then they go to Toronto. So again, right into the AL East to start, then back home against the Guardians, the Rangers, and the White Sox. So a lot of home, long home stands for Milwaukee and Tampa Bay, respectively. Yes, it could be a little bit tough there between New York and Seattle, but I actually really like where the schedule opens up for them in the second half. And then finally, a little longer, maybe speculative play. The Guardians at 16-1. Now, this is all predicated on hopefully getting Jose Ramirez back towards the end of the month and maybe even more after the All-Star break. They already got Chase DeLauder back, and we know that they can pitch. Can they get enough offense to get some of these wins across the line? They're going to finish or at least start July tomorrow by finishing their three-game series against the Texas Rangers. Then they have a massive series, four-gamer against the White Sox before they head on the road to Minnesota and Miami to finish the first half. Second half begins with them hosting Pittsburgh and Minnesota. Then they go to Tampa, they go to Cincinnati, and they're back home against Arizona. Now, their pitching is going to have to carry the day because I don't know if they'll have enough offense day in and day out, if you will. But that to me was worth at least a speculative ad at 16-1. So splitting up one unit, Dave, between three teams, half a unit on Milwaukee at 5-1, clearly the easiest schedule, clearly the best team. Tampa Bay for 0.3 units, if you will, at 12-1. And then the Guardians at 16-1 for 0.2 units. If you want to go a quarter unit for both Tampa Bay and Cleveland, that's fine. The math was just a little bit cleaner for me with the different odds, respectively, for both the Rays and the Guardians. That was my handicap, and especially in a spot where you're looking at some higher variance, of course, month in and month out. But from a scheduling standpoint, boy, these really stood out to me as opportunities to attack in this most wins in July market.
You know how people get when we talk about our leans, because I have a lean as well. Are those official plays for you? Are those just leans that we're giving out to let the people know this is the value that potentially you can find? And by the way, I'm with you at the top of the food chain here with the Brewers at 5-1. It makes the most sense to me if you're going to make that type of play. I know it's the shorter shot. We don't want to bet the shorter shot, but I think you laid it out perfectly why there is value in that number of 5-1.
Yeah, it definitely is one, too, where you look at just some of the bad teams and also where there's an opportunity with the way they're playing. It was a part of kind of watching, you know, a team in Milwaukee that when you look at their home record, 27-17, 10 games over 500, 24-14, 10 games over 500 away from their home ballpark. Mm. Like when you handle your business home and away, that's a hard team to get away from. And the same thing for Tampa, like absolutely dominant there at Tropicana Field. They're the only team in Major League Baseball with over 30 wins at home. They have 31 of them right now, and they're going to play the majority of their games there and have one of their longest home stands there at Tropicana Field. So that was a big thing as far as the handicap goes in those two teams.
I'll tell you this, too, like watching them last night down 3-0 to the Reds. They just dog to the bone. They don't give up the fight. They come back and get that win. That's kind of the Pat Murphy way in Milwaukee. And I'll say this, too. If you think it's smoke and mirrors with this team, you're not paying attention, America. Their run differential is second only to the Dodgers at plus 122.
Yeah,
this is a team now 20 games over 500 after a terrible start. They're legit 5-1. You can spend your money on 5-1 short shots, much worse than that. I actually like that play. The team I'm taking a flyer on, I do not have this in the account here yet, people, because I've been shopping around yesterday. Circa just put these numbers out this morning for their July win total. And the number that I found on this team was 40-1. When I checked this morning at Circa, it's already cut in half to 20-1. And it's been brought to my attention. I do believe this is who Gil Alexander likes as well. And it's the Boston Red Sox. So I was looking at their schedule last night. I really wanted to get involved in Toronto, Jensen, because I actually think on paper, Toronto's staff should hold up better. You're waiting for Vlad Guerrero to hit, but their schedule is brutal. When I went to Boston, it felt very manageable for me. So you get one more against the Nats, who've been scuffling as of late. You mentioned the Anaheim Angels there, one of the worst teams in the league. We'll find out if the White Sox come back to the pack a little bit. My Mets, I'm sorry, you got to pick on them. Look, it's going to be tough for that four-game stretch against Tampa Bay. There's no doubt about that. And then again, against your brethren in the AL East, against Baltimore and Toronto, if you're trying to make inroads here and get into that third spot, potentially a wild card, that's who you're going to have to beat to get in there. It's going to be Baltimore and Toronto, and then the Athletics are on the skids. And you have one game only against the Dodgers. So I look at it and I go at 40-1. If you can still find that out there in the marketplace, I would not play it at 20-1. But again, in conjunction with the number that I saw yesterday at different shops out there, you can find a 40-1. I think Boston, if you're looking for an extreme long shot, is worth a play at that number. I would not play the number now that it's been cut in half. But Toronto is a team, Jensen, I want to get invested with, not just because they're playing my Mets, but because right now I keep waiting for that team and Boston to kind of turn the corner. I wonder if the Sox have done that with that four-game sweep over the Yankees, and then they carried it over with one day against the Mets.
Yeah. The only reason I don't like Boston is the offense has been so yo-yo. And yes, right now they are rolling. I don't need Wilson Contreras to get tossed, albeit it was not one that was his fault yesterday, you know, kind of taps his head walking away from a strike three call. And it was kind of an homage to the ABS, the channel system, and they tossed him for it. Uh-huh. He's a lightning rod. But pitching wise, I can totally get where you're at, because they've been one of the best staffs since June 1st. And if you get that kind of dominant, and they have the opportunity to be dominant in stretches on the mound, so you're going to be in most of those games. To me, I couldn't get there, Dave, just because of their offensive inconsistency, but I totally get where people are at right now, riding the highs, seeing if they can continue that momentum at least through the first half of the regular season.
Can't stress it enough. When I gave that to Joe Friesa yesterday, again, 40-1. The number is dependent on that play, people. So I would play the shortest shot on the board and the Brewers at 5-1. I think that's a fair number. And look for Boston a little bit deeper out there at 40-1 for long shots. Again, trying to get involved with Baltimore and Toronto, and I just can't do it when you look at their schedule coming up here in the month of July. But you better start making the those moves in July, because as you know, Jensen here, once you come back from that All-Star break into the second half after the trade deadline, that's the team that you got the rest of the way if you're going to try to make it into the postseason. This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.